This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Dr. S. Ross Fox. Tonight's subject, what every teenager needs to know about sex. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Tonight on Night Call, we continue our week-long review of the American teenager. Standing by in Seattle, Washington, is medical doctor S. Ross Fox, consultant to teenagers on sexual problems. Now, Dr. Fox is the father of four sons and recently recorded two albums for Century Records dealing with sex, entitled Threshold of Manhood and Threshold of Womanhood. If you would like to ask Dr. Fox a question on tonight's topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our operators are on duty, our lines are wide open, and we'd like to hear from you. Now, our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. And we're especially interested in having some teenagers call tonight, and maybe they have some questions on sex that they'd like answered. Area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Fox, what should every teenager know about sex?
Well, Ross, that's a challenging question. Where do you think we ought to start?
Well, why don't we start with the female? I mean, how does the female develop sexually?
Well, the female starts out, for the purposes of our discussion tonight, as a gangly-legged, rather unfeminine creature of 11 years of age. But under the influence of hormones, which are special chemical compounds, as you know, Russ, that are produced by her ovaries, she begins to change physically and also psychologically, mentally.
At around 11 years of age?
Well, it depends on the gal, really. Some start even sooner than 11. Many start at 12 or 13, and some as late as 14.
Now, why the difference in some people?
Oh, it seems to be an hereditary thing. They are inclined to inherit from their mother or from their father early puberty or late puberty, and I should tell you what I mean by puberty. For the purpose of our discussion, Russ, puberty will be that stage in life when a person changes from a child into an adult.
From a child into an adult.
Right, and it can start anywhere in the gals from about 11 to age 13. The hormone that we're primarily interested in is called estrogen.
Estrogen?
Estrogen is produced in the ovary. Each girl has two ovaries, one on each side. It's located low in her abdominal cavity, right next to her uterus. The uterus, of course, is the womb.
Now, are these organs fully developed when the child is born? When I say fully developed, I mean, are they in miniature there?
Yes, they are fully present. All features of them are there, but they are not developed. They really remain quiescent as far as growth is concerned during the entire childhood period of life. And then as puberty approaches, and these organs begin to enlarge, and the ovaries begin to produce this special chemical called a hormone, which is estrogen. And under the influence of estrogen, the young lady's body begins to grow in height. She also begins to develop the feminine body curves. She begins to feel somewhat like a woman and really look like a woman.
You mean that there is a feeling that women have that is different than men? In other words, there is a sense of being a woman, actually.
Yes. Not only a sense of being a woman, but also a sense of being attracted to the opposite sex. As a child, child. A girl really doesn't care too much for boys, but as she gets into puberty, she all of a sudden develops a profound affinity for them, and we call this affinity libido or sex drive. Without her hormones, Russ, she wouldn't have any libido.
Well, now, should a parent worry if a youngster is late in developing?
It depends on how late she is, Russ. If a mother became pubescent, entered puberty late, she should not be distressed if her daughter doesn't arrive until age 14, but should she go to 14 or even 15 without any symptoms of puberty, it's always a good idea for her to see her physician.
Well, now, how long does it take the female to develop through this puberty state?
Oh, again, it's a matter of an individual thing. They may take 3 or 4 years. Some of them take 5 or 6 years. And during that period of time, they will develop a feminine figure. They will start to menstruate. They will notice a change in their skin, somewhat of a change in their voice. And there is one of us, Russ, who doesn't know the difference between a little girl on the phone and her mother. And we always talk about a boy's voice changing during puberty, but the female voice changes just about as significantly.
Actually, this change is quite rapid, isn't it? When you think in terms of a lifespan.
In terms of a lifespan, it is. It represents, less than a tenth of the life.
Well, now, doesn't psychologically this affect the youngster a great deal, this change to look at in the mirror one day and realize that now she's a young lady and no longer just a kid?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the psychological changes are many times more significant than the physical changes, really. The young lady looks in the mirror, she's had feelings of being a woman and being attracted to the boys. She looks in the mirror and sees herself becoming an adult, and these intense sexual sensations that she feels are much the same as an adult woman has.
Now, are they always directed at the boys in school, or could they be directed to a father image or any male in the household?
They can really be directed anywhere. They might even be directed toward another female.
Yes, I've noticed that sometimes that young girls, when they're very, very young, will seem to be attracted to one another. You'll see them dancing in dance halls and at school dances and things of this nature. This is not any sexual deviation here, is it?
No, it seems to be part of the normal development. It may possibly be due, Russ, to the fact that they feel an affinity for other people. This drive that they have hasn't really become entirely oriented sexually. Eventually, it will focus upon the male. But in its early stages, the gal doesn't recognize it and is interested in associating closely with someone, and so she chooses someone of her own sex.
You mean the sex drive itself, Doctor, is blind, that a female has to learn how to be a female? Is this what you're saying to me?
Well, not entirely, although the sex drive is very important in role identification, in the sense that this young lady's drive to be a woman must also be identified with a mother figure and a womanly, feminine figure, so that she, as she matures, the youngster as she matures, gets a feeling for what genuine femininity is.
What about the tom girl, the tomboy type thing?
This falls into the realm of a mild psychological problem, frequently. It usually occurs in a gal who, during her childhood years, has associated almost primarily with boys, or who, during her childhood years, has failed to identify with a fairly feminine object in her immediate environment.
How old are they when they identify, basically?
Well, they start identifying when they're very tiny, but the very important identification with parents of the same sex and parents of the opposite sex usually occurs around age 5, 6, or 7. But it persists, Russ, and they really have a need during their teenage years to be associated with someone who Lisa, I'm speaking with a gal now, associated with someone who can play the feminine role and demonstrate its advantages.
Our guest tonight, Dr. S. Ross Fox, medical counselor to teenagers on sexual problems. Our topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your
preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. My name is Gibb, and our guest tonight on Night Call, Dr. S. Ross Fox. He's a medical counselor to teenagers on their sexual problems. And our topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex. So if you have a question on teenage sex or you'd like an answer from the doctor, give us a call here at Night Call. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and the number is 313-846-6601. Now, if you wish, you may make the call collect. Reverse the charges. Area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open, and the operators are on duty to receive your call. So we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Dr. Fox, I have a caller in Crawfordsville, Indiana, Mr. John Noy, and he's listening on WFBM. Hello, John. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Well, I would like to ask you, sir, what you to discuss the use in female teenagers of birth control apparatuses. I mean, what are your views on that? I would just like to know.
Doctor?
Yes. Now, John, what aspect of this are you interested in discussing, really? Premarital, actually. It's... I guess you're against it, but I know that it does occur widely, and I would just like to know whether this is harmful to health or anything like that.
In other words, controlling or the use of maybe what is commonly referred in the press today as the pills.
Well, yes.
Doctor, what do you think about that?
John is right. In our American society, there is quite a bit of premarital sexual activity, and in my experience, there are a fair number of our young ladies who are on the pill. That's the
These are young gals that are not married, right, Doctor?
I'm speaking of ones that are unmarried, yes.
Yes.
And medically speaking, as nearly as we know, the pill really is not harmful to health. The research on it has been fairly effective, and we haven't seen any significant complications. There are other types of birth control methods that are available, and I'm sure that many of our unmarried young women use them. To my knowledge, there is no physical detriment to them.
Doctor, I've heard a lot about a new device called the plastic, something made out of plastic for birth control. What is this device?
Well, it's at the moment, in our community anyway, it seems to be the rage, and the people who have stock in the companies that are making the pills are just a little nervous because of these plastic devices. What it, in essence, is a little gadget that is placed by the physician inside of the uterus or the womb, and it acts to prevent pregnancy or prevent fertilization of the female egg by the male sperm. It isn't 100% effective, but it is just about as effective as any of the other contraceptive devices that we've been using for the past several decades.
Would you say that this device is going to transplant, as it were, the pills?
I suppose not, Russ. It will be the plastic coil or device will be used by some of the folks, both single and married. Actually, the utilization by married folks far exceeds that used by the single gal. But the pills do have some complications. Some of the ladies taking them are bothered. Their periods aren't entirely regular. They spot. They sometimes have other symptoms when they take the pill, and so they don't tolerate it and cannot use it.
Are teenage girls taking this today? I mean, very young girls.
Say, how are they using
it? No, I mean, are any youngsters, say, 13 or 14, using these pills today?
If they're using them, I'm unaware of it, Russ. Ordinarily, the youngsters in that age group aren't sophisticated enough to really understand how the pill works, and they have difficulty getting a prescription from a physician. It is true these pills are available on the black market, but at the age of 13, a gal usually isn't well enough connected to the black market to get them.
John?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any other comments or questions you'd like to ask of the doctor?
Well, no, I think that just about covers it as far as my knowledge goes. I thank the doctor a lot, though.
Thank you for calling, John. Mr. John Noy from Crawfordsville, Indiana, listener on WFBM. And, Doctor, I have another caller, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, again listening on WFBM, Mr. Jack LaFollet. Hello, Jack. Speak right up. You're on night call, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. We'd just like to have one point clarified here. We would like to know when an egg can be fertilized in relation to the menstruation period in a female.
That's a good question, Jack, and it's one that it is important that really every young woman understand. And when Russ and I were talking about puberty and sexual development, we didn't have an opportunity to get around to this, so I'm glad you asked it. In the ordinary post-puberty female, as a matter of fact, in the pubescent female, she produces an egg about every 28 days. And it occurs, usually, on the 14th day from the time she starts to menstruate. Now, the young ladies need to understand that the only reason they're menstruating is that they have not become pregnant each month. And the menstruation, the menstrual cycle, is nothing more nor less than the uterus preparing itself for pregnancy. On about the 13th or 14th day, the ovary ejects a tiny egg out into the fallopian tube, which conducts it down into the uterus. If pregnancy occurs, the egg stays. If no sperm happened to be there when the egg arrives, it just withers away and disappears. So we ordinarily tell our young ladies that they will ovulate, that means put out an egg, on the 14th day of their cycle. We know, in relationship to this, that there is considerable variability, however, and we have many gals who will become pregnant on the 10th day of their cycle, and some who will become pregnant as late as the 20th day. And so there has to be some consideration given to this when persons are thinking of becoming pregnant or thinking of avoiding pregnancy.
Jack?
Does that answer your question, Jack?
Well, sir, I'd just like to clear up one more point. After the female has ovulated on the 14th day, is it true, now how long a stage does the egg go through during which copulation can take, I don't mean copulation.
Pregnancy.
Fertilization.
Fertilization can take place, yes.
This, we don't know exactly, Jack, but we suspect that it probably amounts to about 48 hours. That's all the egg lives. If there happens to be sperm there when ovulation occurs and the egg is thrust into the tube, fertilization will take place there. If sperm are introduced later on in the 48-hour life of the egg, the fertilization can occur.
Doctor, how long will the male sperm live in the female?
They think about 24 to 36 hours, Russ, so that you have a spread of 48 hours egg life plus 12 to 24, maybe a little longer, sperm life, and that's all you have, really, so the opportunity for pregnancy in a woman is usually limited to 2.5 days during her cycle.
Now, what if a woman took one of the pills immediately after fertilization? Would the pill have any effect then?
It would have no effect at all, and the only advantage of the so-called pill is that it has to be taken from the time of the last menstrual cycle, and ovulation is prohibited by taking it in that manner. It has to be taken on a daily basis. A gal who takes the pill after having sexual contact is fooling herself. It doesn't help a bit. The only person it helps is our obstetrician.
When I say a girl is worried about possibly becoming pregnant, and it's still within this 48-hour period that you were talking about, can she go to her doctor for help at this time?
Ordinarily, no, because we are dealing, Russ, with microscopic sperm and microscopic egg. If fertilization is going to occur, there isn't really much that we can do to prevent it. It's all happening up inside the uterus, and we don't have much access to the inside of the uterus. There isn't much that the gal can do either.
Now, do you find that most young gals understand this in your dealing with your
most
counseling
work? Most of them do not understand it. Most of them don't understand the entire physiology of the menstrual cycle. They don't know why they menstruate. Many of them don't even understand how.
Sir?
Yes, Jack.
At this time, I'd like to ask you, what causes in some women a longer menstruation period, say, perhaps up to 7 days out of the whole cycle, to have a 7-day period of menstruation? Can you tell me what would contribute to this?
Yes, it's all controlled by their hormones, Jack. If some gals produce hormones that lead them to menstruate for 7 days, they just do. Some will menstruate for only 3, and we see women who cover the entire spectrum, menstruating from 2.5 days to 8 or 9, and they're all normal, really.
I see. Would perhaps a longer menstruation period be due to a greater number of hormone or greater hormone output?
It might be, but it also may be just to particular sensitivity by the woman's body to these hormones.
I see.
You see, and it's a very subtle thing, and the final answer hasn't been written yet, Jack, in that regard.
In other words, sex is still quite a bit of a mystery.
Well,
few aspects.
Some of the very subtle changes we don't understand entirely, but by and large, it's all been scientifically evaluated, and we know quite a bit about it.
Doctor, if a female misses her period, is particularly after intercourse has taken place, is this a sure sign that fertilization has taken place?
It is not, Ross, a sure sign, but it is very suspicious. The most common cause of missing a menstrual period is pregnancy.
What is the frog test, Doctor?
The frog test is a relatively simple test that we use to tell whether or not a gal is pregnant, and it is done in several ways. The common way that it's done is that some of the woman's urine is placed in the frog, and it causes the frog to be stimulated, and he produces some sperm, and this is evaluated under the microscope, and they're able to tell whether the gal is pregnant by the response of the frog.
Jack, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Jack, you still there? I guess Jack has left the line. Mr. Jack LaFollette from Indianapolis, Indiana. Caller, a listener, rather, on WFBM.
Our guest tonight is Dr. S. Ross Fox. He's a medical counselor to teenagers on sexual problems. Our topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call. where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, what every teenager needs to know about sex. Our guest, Dr. S. Ross Fox, medical counselor to teenagers on sexual problems. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask the doctor or make a comment about sex, give us a call here at our Night Call national number. That's area code 313-846-6601. Now, it's very easy to call us here at Night Call. Our lines are open and our operators are on duty. You may call from anywhere, collect. Now, please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. And we'd like to hear from you. Doctor, I have a caller in Muncie, Indiana now, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Joe Scott. Good evening, Joe. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call. Joe, you're going to have to speak up, please.
I would like to know if copulation can occur if the male organ does not enter the female body.
Doctor?
Joe, let me be sure that I understand your question. Are you asking, does sexual intercourse occur without the male penis entering the female body? Or are you asking, can fertilization occur?
Right.
Pregnancy occur. Now you're asking, can pregnancy occur without intercourse?
Right.
Joe, it's an unusual occurrence, but it has been reported. What really needs to be done is that the sperm needs to be deposited on the outside of the female sexual apparatus, and pregnancy can occur, although it's quite unlikely. The reason being that these little tiny sperm have to swim all the way up the vagina to the uterus, all the way up the uterus, and all the way out one of the fallopian tubes to where the egg has been presented, and it would be just like you or me trying to walk to the moon. So it's unlikely that pregnancy can occur under those circumstances, although it does rarely.
Joe, any other comments?
Well,
did we answer your question on Night Call?
Yes, got another one.
Well, go right ahead, Joe.
Are male contraceptives effective against pregnancy?
Yes, that's right, Doctor.
Well, the answer to that, Joe, is yes. And I suppose you're speaking of what is commonly called the condom, which is a rubber apparatus that the male uses, and it does prevent pregnancy if it's properly used, although we have to admit very quickly that it's not 100% effective. As a matter of fact, there is nothing that is 100% effective that we're using nowadays to prevent pregnancy.
Well, could I ask, how about diaphragm?
A diaphragm is an instrument that the woman uses. It's placed into the vagina to protect the end of the uterus or womb from getting the sperm into it, and the diaphragm is just about as effective as the male contraceptive device called the condom. Neither one is 100% effective, but they both are relatively good.
Well, are they as effective as the revolutionary pill?
They're not quite as effective as the pill. At the moment, in modern America, the pill, properly used, seems to be the most effective single contraceptive.
Okay. If, say, a woman is on the pill and then stops, is she more susceptible to pregnancy as she stops taking the pill?
That's a good question, and the answer seems to be that she might be a little more fertile after having stopped the pill. How much more fertile is hard to say because each gal is an individual and each one is different. But there seems to be no loss of fertility from having taken the pill, and most of the gals are quite capable of becoming pregnant quite soon after they stop it.
Joe, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you.
Enjoyed your comments here, Mr. Joe Scott from Muncie, Indiana. Doctor, while I've been listening to these calls here, one thing struck me. Are these pills going to allow a license for sexual freedom, do you think, to our young people? In other words, our young people who might normally not have sexual intercourse before marriage, and I'm aware that many youngsters are having sexual intercourse before marriage, do you think this pill is going to sort of give them an assurance, as it were, and that we might have an increase in this type of behavior?
It's a little difficult to evaluate. We suspect that the pill is giving a fair number of young ladies some liberties they've not had before. On the other hand, most of these young folks who are involved in sexual activities are there because of their libido, their sex drive, their sexual needs. And most of them in the past have, in spite of no contraception, gone ahead with their sexual activities. And it has produced some genuine social and psychological difficulties, such as unwanted pregnancies, unwanted marriages. I haven't detected in our area any significant decrease in the number of unwanted pregnancies.
In other words, this is not a new problem to mankind, then, obviously.
Most certainly not. Right.
And even though we might think that the American teenager today is, you know, preoccupied with sex, it might be that they're just more open about it and that these things become more available to people to discuss and... as we evaluate the new morality, as some people want to call it. Doctor, I have a caller, a young lady from Bloomington, Indiana, listener on WFBM, Miss Sue Haven. Good evening, Sue. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
I beg your pardon?
You're on Night Call.
Well, I was wanting to ask the doctor, if a boy really loves a girl, will he expect her to overindulge in sex, and should she?
Now, that's a good question, Sue, and what I would like to know from you is what you mean by overindulging sex.
Well, not as far as intercourse, but how far should she go?
Now, are you asking, should a young lady prior to marriage become involved in sexual activities? Should she have intercourse? Is that your question?
Well, yes.
That's a difficult question to answer, really. It's difficult to answer that, Sue, because it depends on the individual gal. It depends on her childhood. It depends on what her parents have taught her. It depends on her attitude toward sexual activities. And the psychiatrists tell us that if a gal were to come from a home in which there was a considerable amount of sexual leniency, that she might not be too significantly damaged by having premarital sexual activities. On the other hand, if she comes from the type of an American home that many folks come from, where premarital sexual activities are not to include intercourse, then if she has intercourse prior to marriage, she will be bothered by guilt feelings and anxiety. And a gal who has these kind of feelings really blunders in becoming sexually involved prior to marriage. And her boyfriend blunders if he forces her into it.
Is there any way that youngsters can control these drives that they have, Doctor? Or is this a learning process?
One of the best ways that I know to control the drives is to develop some type of understanding for them, Russ. Understanding of why they have them and what the drives are supposed to accomplish. One of the problems is that the youngsters are overwhelmed by these intense sexual drives. Here they are with adult sexual interests, but teenage bodies and teenage minds, teenage psychological outlooks. If they understand that these drives are normal, that all of the youngsters have them, they can usually handle them without having to become involved directly in sexual intercourse.
Are teenagers as sexually, stimulated as adults? In other words, are their emotions as deep as adults?
If you mean as deep, if you mean by that, Russ, as intense,
yes.
As nearly as we know, yes. They feel their sexual drive very intensely, and this is wherein the problem lies. Many of them are experiencing these sensations for the first few times. They really don't know what they're dealing with. They sometimes are overwhelmed by them.
So just keeping the kids separated, you know, the strict-type parents saying, well, look, you cannot go out at all. I don't want you to have anything to do with the opposite sex until you get married, might not be the thing to do.
It might not be. In many families, it is not. This kind of a stringent approach to it frequently leads to an habitual masturbation and problems like that, right? And I don't know how many of our listeners understand what masturbation is. Maybe we better define that. For the purposes of our discussion,
yes,
masturbation is self, sexual stimulation, and sexual release. Now, they're all forms of masturbation, but for our discussion tonight, we should limit it to sexual release.
Well, now, is this for the male and the female?
Both, yes. It seems to be a little more common in the male than in the female, but
is this type of release via masturbation automatically medically bad for one's health?
According to the psychiatrists, it is not. As a matter of fact, they say that some type of masturbation is not uncommon in the teenage years in most of the fellas and many of the gals, and that as long as they understand that it is a controllable thing, that it is a release of rather natural sexual drives, that they will be all right, and they ultimately will come to obtain their sexual release primarily from intercourse after marriage, and the masturbation will just be a passing...
A stage, as it were.
Stage, a sexual release during the period of puberty.
Sue?
Yes?
Did you have any other comments you'd care to make?
Well, back to my original question, I was just wondering if a girl did indulge in sex with a boy that she liked, then would he respect her for it?
Sue, that's a difficult question. It always comes up in the courtship years when we have young men and young women who are strongly attracted to one another. It is thought by some that a gal who lets herself become involved sexually actually decreases her chances for a satisfactory marriage. And there are many who feel that by so doing she allows her husband to possibly sometime in the future mistrust her a little bit, wonder about her fidelity. On the other hand, there is a school of thought that is quite widespread in America now that says that this kind of a relationship by a gal with a fellow to whom she is betrothed is normal and to be expected and not detrimental. I really can't answer your question because it depends on the individuals involved.
And Doctor, you're saying something that I've heard many times on Night Call when we get into topics on the numerality, that there's no one rule that can work. You always have to look in different shadings, as it were, with the individuals that are involved. Is this what you're saying to us?
This is what I'm saying, and the reason for this, Russ, is fairly straightforward. It's because we are not all spawned in the same nest. We don't have the same psychological structure. Our experiences during childhood are all different. We respond to the environment differently, and we all come from different environments. We cannot all be expected to, in a given situation, respond the same.
Sue, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
It's nice talking to you, Miss Sue Haven, from Bloomington, Indiana, a listener on WFBM.
Our guest tonight, Dr. S. Ross Fox. He's a medical counselor. Our topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money! Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes? Out on that limb, without him. It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight, Dr. S. Ross Fox. He's a medical counselor to teenagers on sexual problems. Our topic, what every teenager needs to know about sex. And this is part of our continuing week-long look at the teenager on Night Call. If you'd like to join us here at Night Call or make a comment or ask the doctor a question, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number, area code, 313-846-6601. Doctor, I have a caller in Bozeman, Montana, a listener on KXXL, Mr. Bob Wardrop. Hello, Bob. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Hello, Ross.
Yes, sir. You're coming.
I'd like to ask a doctor question here. The problem seems to be the understanding, this natural drive of sex, and I'd like his opinion in regards to having sexual education taught in schools, and if so, about when should it be taught?
Doctor?
Bob, when we start answering questions like that, we get involved with PTAs, we get involved with school boards, we get involved with irate parents, and if I were to answer your question honestly, if sex education were provided in every household situation, it wouldn't be needed in the schools. However, we must be realistic and recognize that in many homes, because of insecurities by the parents and various other reasons, sex education isn't too satisfactory. We really need something in the schools, Bob, and the time to give it to the youngsters is when they begin to have questions about it.
And when is that, about what general age?
Oh, that starts in kindergarten and goes right through high school.
In other words, in kindergarten, is not you could possibly start to talk about sex.
That's right. You start on a very casual basis and keep it superficial. As they go on through the years, junior high school is a prime time to discuss such things as the physiology of sex, the development that occurs during puberty. This is the time when, at the present, we're teaching our young gals about the menstrual cycle. We're teaching the young men about their physical and psychological changes during puberty. We get on into high school and we can develop the subject even further. And a very fine spot to teach sex and sexual concepts is in college. And some of the best classes I had in my memory were those achieved, or that we had in college.
Doctor, is it possible for adult married people still to have misinformation about sex?
It's not only possible, but it is very common, Russ. As a matter of fact, in our society, there's a genuine need for good, sound sexual counseling for married people.
In other words, you're saying that we're lacking something in our society, then we really, you know, for a society that is so preoccupied with the word sex, it's amazing to me to hear you make that comment.
I really think, Russ, that we are becoming a little better informed than we have in times gone by, but we're not all the way down the road yet. There still needs to be some work done.
Bob, thank you for calling Night Call.
Yeah, can I have one more?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
I understand the doctor's opinion on the not going into the school aspect, and I think the problem here would probably be having to educate the parents.
Doctor?
To educating their children in regards to sex.
That's right, Bob, and that's a difficult problem, and the reason it's difficult is because the parents have their own sexual problems. And they feel guilty and anxious when we bring up the subject of sex. They can't talk about it comfortably, and as a result, they don't learn the concepts that they can pass on to their youngsters. So the youngsters are left wanting, and that's why we have to provide it in the schools. It would be wonderful if we could get all the parents of America into a seminar, into a schoolroom, into some kind of a situation where we could really teach them sexual concepts and sexual techniques and the physiology and anatomy of sex.
Bob, thank you for calling Night Call.
Okay, Russ, thank you.
Good night, sir.
Good night,
Mr. Bob Wardrop, a listener on KXXL out in Montana. And I understand that the doctor knows that area. You've been hunting out in Bosman, right?
I have, and it's wonderful.
That's big sky country out there.
You bet.
Doctor, we have a caller in Denver, Colorado, which is right out there in the Rockies now, a listener on KTLN, Marge G. Hello, Marge. Speak
Good
right
morning.
Up. You're on Night Call.
Fine, thank you.
Good morning, Marge.
Good morning, Doctor. I can't hear you too well.
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. One question. After having several psychology courses myself, I would be very interested if you would discuss the relationship and effect the early training has on a child. And for instance, we were taught in the very, very young years that a child's whole attitudes towards sexual relationships and general relationships, just in general, were formed during the anal stage or during toilet training.
Mark,
you've
now broached a subject that will take us 3 hours to discuss, and it is really that important. And what you've said is true, and that is that the sexual development of the child begins just about an hour after he's born and lasts until he's 99. But the most important stages of his sexual development are early in his childhood as he passes through various phases. Now, you've mentioned the anal phase. There's the oral phase that is very important. And ultimately, he develops into the genital phase.
Well, what stage is he in when he's a teenager, Doctor?
Well, hopefully by then he's into the genital stage where he derives his sexual pleasures from genital things. But he may not be there, Russ. He as Marge, I'm sure, knows, he may have had an inhibited development somewhere along the way and really never gotten through it all. Really may not have matured properly. And it's the responsibility of his parents to see that he gets the proper maturing pattern. They really cannot do it consciously on many occasions. They unconsciously have their own problems and thereby inhibit the development of their youngsters.
Marge, any other comments?
From what I could hear, I can't hear too well, but it sounds very interesting. For instance, I have a 3-year-old nephew, and I know from my courses and from how my sister-in-law handles him that when we started trying to toilet training him, rather than what she did, it was his first chance at independence, of course, and we could see it not only in her but in many mothers where they would say, no, you know, if the child were not able to perform his functions properly, and pretty soon everything was nasty and no, and they just become associated that whole area with
Does this mean that the youngster will grow up not liking sex? Is that what she's saying to me? I'm not a psychiatrist
or a
psychologist.
That's exactly what Marge is saying, and that is that he is told that these things are nasty when he is tiny, So he grows up with a negative attitude towards sex, which means that anything sexual is associated with guilt.
And that's where we get the idea that sex is dirty.
That's right. If we could go back to Bob Wardrop's question, we would be able to say then that if we could teach parents to approach their children with a positive attitude towards sex and to be able to communicate to them the concept that sexual activities are pleasant, they're to be desired, they are also to be controlled, they're to be held within reason, but that they are something that are to be anticipated with relative eagerness.
And Marge, I have another caller waiting on the line. Thank you for calling Night Call.
I want to thank you, and I want to say I quite frankly have never heard the subject discussed so freely and openly, either on television or radio, and I, for one, really appreciate it and enjoying it very much.
Well, you're very kind, and thank you for your comments, Marge. Miss Marge G. from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. And, Doctor, I have a caller in Gary, Indiana now, a listener on WFBM, Jeff Stefanovich. Hello, Jeff. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, and we have about a minute and a half for your comments, Jeff.
Okay, yes, sir. I'd like to get in one question very quickly.
Go ahead, Jeff.
If the female doesn't nurse her offspring, are the chances of breast cancer better than if she were to nurse her offspring for, say, possibly the period of a year?
I can answer that very quickly. There are statistics that demonstrate that the cancer of the breast is more common in women who nurse their babies, and there are also some figures that indicate that it is more common in women who do not nurse. I can't tell you really for sure which one is which, and it isn't significant, because any gal who has a lump in her breast ought to have it checked anyway.
Jeff, that's about all the time that we have remaining on Night Call. I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, Jeff.
Good night, Jeff.
Jeff Stefanovich from Gary, Indiana, listener on WFBM. Doctor, one question.
Go ahead, Ron.
If an individual wants to get more information about sex, a parent, who's the best person you should see for this information?
Oh, there are a whole host of people. There are some excellent books that are out, and I can't just off the cuff give you a title.
Well, let's say about your albums. Your albums do a pretty good job, and that's, of course, The Threshold of Manhood and The Threshold of Womanhood. And I believe that was on the Century label, right?
Right.
And I think that's a pretty good start, and you even have an illustrated brochure there, and then you have a glossary with all the terms. Doctor, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
My pleasure.
I've enjoyed you immensely. Your comments have been most interesting and most informative. Our guest tonight, Dr.
S. Ross Fox, medical counselor to teenagers on sexual problems. Our topic tonight was Whatever Teenager Needs to Know About Sex. Tomorrow night, we continue our look at the American teenager on Night Call, and we have as our guest Mr. Mark Jaffe, and he's the vice president of Bantam Books. And the topic tomorrow night, teenagers have good habits too, and basically that'll be about what type of books the youngsters read. And I think we might even get into Playboy. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.